on this broadcast, you're going to hear specifically from NHC winner Mike Gillum. Join Mike and everybody else at next year's NHC by playing in the Florida Derby Challenge, available at expressbet.com, also on track at Santa Anita Park and Gulfstream Park. That is going to take place next Saturday, March 30th, as part of the Florida Derby Day extravaganza in Hallandale Beach. It's a live money contest that has a buy-in of $1,500, a $1,000 bankroll, and a $500 entry fee that goes to the prize pool. 100% of entry fees are paid out as cash prizes. Among the other prizes will be spots in the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge and the Pegasus World Cup tournament that takes place every January. Join in on the Florida Derby Challenge with our friends at First Racing and Express Bet, also available on track at Santa Anita and Gulfstream Park. Welcome to the March 22nd edition of the In the Money Players podcast. Nick Tamaro here filling in again for Peter Thomas Hornetal, who is still in England living it up. I'm sure drinking Mech ale and doing all of the English things that he likes to do when he's over there, especially with the family. I am hosting the Players podcast once again. Very excited about this show. We're going to have a little bit of coverage of the racing at Aqueduct on Saturday afternoon. Also Santa Anita, the pick five, specifically late pick five in Santa Anita, the pick six at Aqueduct. And then I will also be joined by Klaus Ebner for a little bit of JRA coverage. That'll be towards the end of the program. And I'm very excited to have a special guest with me to handicap the races, but also to talk about what was a pretty darn good weekend for him last weekend. I will be joined by Mike Gillum, the NHC winner for 2024. And Mike is here with me right now. Mike, I hate doing the whole, hey, how you doing, this and that. So I always start with a question. Has there been yet, or if there hasn't, what will be the first frivolous purchase that you make with the $800,000?
Well, right before I went to Vegas, I had to drop my truck off to get it fixed because it was acting up and whatever. It wasn't holding the radiator fluid or whatever. So when I'm in Vegas, I get a call from the place and they say, hey, you have a blown gasket in your truck. I have a 2016 F1 Ford pickup and with 228,000 miles on it. So that'll be traded in for a new platinum pickup truck. So that is the one thing that I am buying. So, yes.
I like hearing that. And every time you get in that truck, you're going to remember those 3 days in Las Vegas, no doubt about it. So I could ask you a million questions. I know you've done a lot of media around the racing landscape, and I really appreciate you taking the time to come on and talk to me. I'm sure part of the difference between a lot of the people who've interviewed you and me, at the very least, is that I've been in the NHC 8 times, so I can at least have a little bit of a sense of what you're talking about with some of it. But going into Sunday, did you really think you had a shot to win?
Yes, I did. And this is why. I was 10 points from jumping up 30 spots. So I started in 64th. I was $10 away from getting to 34th place. And I was $34 getting to the final table. So it was such a tight bunch. You know, most of these, this is my third one. The first one, there was bombs coming in everywhere. And I didn't hit nothing early and bombs kept coming in. And then you have to go to bombs then, right? So, and this was a, I kind of, projected there to be not a lot of bombs, by the way, I handicapped, so I was wanting to play who I liked. So yes, I really did think that I had a shot. I thought it was a long shot. I mean, being in 64th, you know how it is. Me and you last year stood in line together at the cage in cash.
We did, yep.
And then went play blackjack together. But so each and every spot you move up, like if you go from 40th to 30th, each spot is like $100, no big deal. But once you start getting up there, then they'll jump up 5,000 or 10,000 or even a bunch more. So my I was guaranteed cash, so that always takes the pressure off. So you could really, I didn't want to fire. I really wanted to just work my way up. It was, the first half of the day, we had 23 races that we had to do 10 optionals. And they weren't the best races. There was a lot of short fields. Didn't see any big prices out there. So I had to juggle through the 23 races and pick 10 of the races that I liked the best. That's what I did. I started out and lost the first two on Sunday. So I was down to 8 bullets. I dropped back to 75th spot. So I'm like second to last out of the remaining 77. But I just stuck to my guns and played exactly who I had picked that morning. I just kept creeping up and crawling up and got there.
So yeah, no, exactly. And walking through a little bit of who those horses were. So in the fourth race at Tampa, you had an 8-1 winner. And obviously that, went a long way towards moving you up the leaderboard. I think with the place price, you got about $25 there. And that was not long after followed by a $15.60 winner at Oaklawn that got you another $22.20. And so, boom, at that point, you're adding almost $48. That obviously vaulted you up quite a bit. And then I noticed that you took actually early on at Gulfstream, it looks like you took a horse that was about 7-5, right? Was that to kind of see the ball go through the hoop a little bit and remind everybody that you were still in the mix?
Absolutely. It was permed. He was, 2-1 morning line. He went off at 75.
Overwhelmingly likely winner on paper.
Yeah. So $8.20 for the 7-5 to shot that jumped me up, I was looking to go home with more money than you just want to make as much
sure.
as you can. Of course you want to win,
right.
But you just want to move up that late, leaderboard. So that $8.20, it was a 7-5. I've had a lot of criticisms like, why would this dummy take a 7-5 shot? Well, I'm trying to move up the board. So I did. It was 2-1 morning line. Went off 7-5 and it won. So yes, I moved up, and then I played another 8-5 shot. It was a Bringer of Rain. It was 3-1 morning line. Went off at 8-5. Come in second, so I got $3. I was happy to get the $3. And then, like you said, I had a 8-1 on Sunday, and then also it was a 6.8-1 that. It was holding pattern at Oaklawn third. So that got me, like you said, $22 and change.
So then you squeeze your way into the final table. You're in the final table by a dollar, basically. You're in there by $1.04 over GT Nixon. And I mean, just to put things in perspective, the guy who was 11th had a whopping $2.20 less than you did. And I think you brought it up a little bit before, and it kind of encapsulates the whole reason why you were able to get from where you were at the beginning of the day to where you were at the end of the day is that this was an exceptionally tight pack. I mean, going into this, I've been to enough NHCs to know that, there were NHCs where the final table was just a fait accompli, right? The guy in front was so far in front and nobody was ever going to come close to him. And, we were just going through the motions to try and figure out who was going to pick up an extra $5,000 or $10,000 in the also-rans, if you will. But, you went into this thing $33 behind. Had you looked at the final table races at all going into Sunday? I guess the difference is that they were always going to be included in the Silver Sunday contest that you were also able to be a part of as well. So how ready were you for those, and how quickly did you start handicapping to get fully prepared?
Friday I was in fifth after day one, and then I didn't have a very good Saturday, and then I finally squeaked in at the, I hit two favorites just to squeak in on Saturday just to make the cut. But I was asking them for the final table ones on Saturday, and they didn't come out until it was I was late on Saturday when they finally came out. But I finally got them, and I was kind of working on it Saturday night, you know, Saturday on the final table ones, or, you know, the seven mandatories for the silver tournament. But I had them picked at 6 o'clock that morning. I didn't do 1 minute of handicapping after 6 o'clock in the morning. It was all done. The work was done. I had my picks, and if I had to adjust, I can. You're allowed to do that. So, but I was going to try to get there with what I had. I had a couple. Okay. I like this one, but if I'm not, you know, not in the right spot, I have this longer shot that I can take. So I had those kind of lined up and ready to go too. So I wouldn't have really needed to go back and do more handicapping because I had it all prepared. I was like, I like this one. And it, you know, maybe 3-1 or 7-1 or whatever, or 8-5 or whatever it was. But I kind of like this one if I had to take a bomb, you know, or a longer shot just to get to where I needed to get to make that final table. So that was my philosophy. But I had them all picked out. I did not change on Sunday. I did not change one single pick all the way through. It just happened to fall to where I, you know, could use those picks, and it worked. If I had to, yes, I would have. But I didn't have to. So it all kind of worked out.
Exactly. And that was a good strategy, of course, that, you know, you figure a lot like somebody calling the plays in a football game. You have things you're going to do when it's 3rd and 15, and you have things you're going to do when it's 1st and goal from the 2-yard line. Right.
So I did play college football, and I was a head football coach for grade school for 15 years. So, yes. I was a head.
Which
football
I did
coach.
Not know. So that was
I did call the plays.
I'm going to take credit for that being a great segue, because I did not know that. So
you didn't know that. I know that. That's funny.
But yeah, I mean, that's kind of how it worked out, right? Is that you know, part of the difficulty of this thing, and I mean, you know, my admiration for anybody that can win this thing, that making the final table is tough enough. I've cashed twice. I feel like I've had an incredible amount of good fortune when I've done so. I'm sure you feel similarly, having cashed twice now and obviously having gotten the big prize. But you have to be so audible ready. I mean, you have to be so fluid in terms of what you're going to do. And I mean, you can have people tell you, oh, I'm going to go in with a plan. I'm going to be ready for this and that. And then you're going to get kicked in the ass and have to change your approach and pivot right away. And, you know, this was one of those days, obviously, where your pivots went well. So your first move at the final table happened. I can't really get a breakdown of where. I know I was following it along somewhat closely, but you,
I got it
who
right
was the
here.
First horse that you hit? Yeah. Who was the first horse you hit at the final table that really vaulted you up?
The very first one, it was Be Better. It was the 8th race at Laurel.
Oh, so it's the first
Be
one.
Better.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. And it was the morning line 2-1, and it actually went off at 5-2. So, you know, I got a better price, and I got a 1080. So, so the very first one I got 1080, that got me up to, I think, 5th, I think. So, I mean, that's how tight the leaderboard, a short 1080 got me from 8th to 5th.
And at that point, were you now thinking, okay, here's where I can somehow kind of chart my course to first?
My path was there. I wasn't going to change. I mean, my plan was, I am not changing a pick until the very last one going in. That's if I had to. And I didn't have to, but I was going to play all the way through. Even, I mean, I played a 5-2, a 9-5, an 8-5, you know, a 4-1 and a 5-1. But so I wasn't changing any, because the board was to where I was in reach. So to move up in that final table is huge. It's, you know, 10th place is $65,000, and then second place is $250,000. So that there's a big spread there. So I would have been thrilled to get 5th or 4th or 3rd or 2nd. But it just worked out where I just kept hitting.
And then obviously the winner that put you in first was Ben Diesel at Oaklawn in the second to last race.
Ben Franklin,
right, who got you into first, and that was when you went in front of Seth Morris, who had been the longtime leader. And then obviously going into that fifth race at Santa Anita, tell me a little bit about your thought process and where it shook out with a couple of horses that were relatively short prices, including the eventual winner.
Well, I like Sharp as a Tack. That's who I really like. But I also kind of like the two-horse McKinnon. I bet McKinnon in the Breeders' Cup like 2 years ago or something, and I always had a liking for that horse. But when I came down, 6 o'clock that morning, I said, I like Sharp as a Tack better. So that was my choice. But if I had a change, I could. But I just was able to stick to it. It just happened to be the favorite. He was 3-1 on the morning line, and he went off 8-5. I had a $1.22 lead going into the final race, and it won. I got $8.60 total for the 8-5 shot. So it got me home.
Worked out beautifully as he pulled clear down the stretch, and I saw the videos, of course, and you were very excited, rightfully so. And so you've mentioned that you had your plans pretty much together at 6 o'clock in the morning, Sunday morning. Are you a guy are you a get up early in handicap, or were you up until the wee hours, or I'm sure there was a little bit of both?
Well, you know, you want to handicap with a clear head. So I handicap as much as I could that night before. And as soon as I started getting like tired and like, you know, the eyes crossing, went ahead and went to bed, and I got up like, I don't know, 4 o'clock maybe, or 4:30, and, you know, just woke up and I was like, I felt fresh, and I'm like, okay, now I think that's when I finally got to the final table, was then. I got all the optionals the night before, and then when I woke up, I said, okay, let's attack this final table or the final seven, you know, to the Silver Sunday contest. But did you hear about that? That was awful.
What's that?
Okay, so my philosophy was all 3 days, let's put your picks in first thing in the morning. And if you have to change them, you can, but you don't want to be that guy who forgets to turn a pick in or screw something up or whatever. So I turn all my picks in. On Friday, I turned them in first thing. It was early. As soon as it was open, I turned my picks in. And the same thing on Saturday, I did the same thing. And then on Sunday, I did the same thing, but I didn't do the final table on either the Silver Sunday or the, you know, the finals. I just did the optionals. And then I was so excited that, you know, to make the final table, I forgot to put my mandatories in for the Silver Sunday. And I would have won that. I would have won $25,000 and an extra seat and all this other crap. But
goodness.
The final table, I had five winners and a second and one blank. And I would have got home a winner of that one. But anyway, I screwed that up. But that's why I put my stuff in early in the morning, so I don't make that mistake that I really did make on the other one, you know. So.
Yeah, no, I actually brought this up talking about it with Pete the other day when we were doing last week's recap. And I said, your day three performance was worth $140. And David Harrison won the Silver Sunday contest with like $125. So, I mean, it was, you obviously picked the right races and it worked out okay. But yeah, that would have been a nice cherry on top. Nonetheless, I don't expect anybody out there for you to have a tremendous amount of sympathy for you, not winning
$25,000. Yeah,
I know how it feels, and you want it all, right? When you're that right, we know this game, right? When you're that right, you want to take it all. So, reminder for everybody. And I actually did not realize, because I mean, I didn't qualify this year, that they were doing it that way, that everybody was playing, even the semifinalists were playing the Silver Sunday contest. That's pretty cool. And I think I can only imagine that it, it increased the level of interest on Sunday, which otherwise had been kind of a, you know, Sunday afternoon in there would be kind of a library after a while because everybody.
Yeah, it was a great move. Everybody stayed. It was like one of the best moves that they made. The other good move they made, Nick, was they changed Friday to six mandatories and 10 optionals. And then they made Saturday 10 and 10. So they kind of gave a few extra races, took two away from Friday and gave them to Saturday, you know, for better racing. And it really was nice. I really liked that. So you had 16 day one and 20 day two and then 17 day three.
Yeah, that looked like a good decision. They also added Turfway. Or are you somebody that took advantage of Turfway? Or
when I was a kid, I used to go to Latonia and go to Turfway all the time. But lately, I mean, I just haven't had any luck at Turfway whatsoever. But I think I did hit a couple at Turfway that helped me out. No, not that one. I don't know. I don't. Well, I mean, maybe not. No, I didn't on that one. But no, that really didn't help me out.
So you were from Indianapolis. Tell us a little bit about your horse playing life. Are you, you're somebody who's not played in the NHC, at least for very long. Have you been playing contests for a while?
Yeah. I've been playing the horses my whole life. I mean, since I could walk, my dad dragged me to the track, you know, River Downs, Churchill, Latonia, Turfway, whatever. And we would go all the time. My uncle, Mike, owned horses. He owned horses with Norman Cassie Sr. They had a horse. Anyway, I won't get into all that, but yeah, so I grew up with all that. And, as far as contest play, I started with the Derby Wars when that, you know, tournament thing, you know, came right about. It was probably what, 9 or 10, I don't know. So I played with Derby Wars for 2 or 3 years, and then they got in that contract situation and couldn't carry some tracks, and then I shifted to the horse tourneys, and I've been playing there regularly for a while. So I played in a ton of pick and praise. So I've played in so many pick and praise that normally you have like 10 races or 12 races in the contest, and you know, what's going to win those is anywhere from, you know, 100, 150. So if you have 10 races to do that or 12 races, so I felt like, you know, you're getting more races at NHC. So just put some points on the board and just start adding to it, you know, and don't go for the bombs. I mean, that was just my philosophy, that my goal was just to get to like 75 or 100 on day one. So just, you know, you have 16 shots to get to $75 or $100. So I was just trying to make the cut. You know, I wanted to come home with some money. You know, if you make the cut, you're guaranteed at least 10 grand. So I was just trying to make the cut. And then you try to make the cut to the final table, and then of course you try to win it. But my goal was just to try to make the cut, and I just wanted to get $75. You have 16 bullets to get to $75 or 100. So just play who you like. I mean, so that's what I did. And I kind of, so day one, I did have an 18-1 shot. I did have St. James at Aqueduct on day one. Sure. So that, you know, that helped. So I finished day one at $137. So anyway, that was just my philosophy and taking the lower odds than some of these bigger odds. I played a lot of, you know, one dumb play that I probably would do it again, but there was a mandatory on Saturday at Laurel. It was a 7-horse field, got scratched down to 4 horses. And I played a 1-5 shot Nimitz class. I just wanted the $5. And of course it ran out. It didn't do anything, but I was in such a tight leaderboard and I just wanted to get on the board. I wanted to see that ball go through the hoop. Just like you said, you know, it's like, just get that $5. That could help you make that cut. And of course I played the 1-5 shot in a 4-horse field and he didn't do anything. So it was a bad play, but If I had to do it again, I think I probably would have. I mean, in that scenario where I was, I think I would do it again, even though it was kind of a dumb play, but I just wanted to move up and get that $5 would have been, you know, great, but I didn't. It lost.
No, I get it. I totally understand and I will be honest with you, the two times that I've cashed in the NHC, I had winners at less than 2-1 both times. So, I mean, and I knew the second time around, there was a mandatory race at Gulfstream on Friday, and the race was won by Dr. Zempf, who was a Chad Brown horse shipping in from overseas. And I think he went off less than 9-5. He may have even been 6-5. And everybody at the table was like, oh, you're going to get a better place price on a horse that slides in. And I said, you know, I'm not going to burden myself with figuring out who's going to finish second. I think this horse is going to win. And I'll tell you what, Mike, at about 3:30 on Saturday afternoon, I sure was glad I had that $6. Because right? we were all looking to try and find that $5 or $6 that would solidify us into day number three. And then, you know, let the chips fall where they may on the third day. So I think it's a, I also think, and being, having played contests and I primarily just play live money contests to try and qualify, but playing the NHC, I said to a few people when I did the NHC preview pod on this network last year, that I feel like in many ways, 6-1 is the new 12-1 because racing, yeah, admittedly, other than Saturday afternoon, it is not as competitive as it used to be. And, you know, and you mentioned that you had an 18-1 shot on Friday, which, you know, last year there were zero cap horses on Friday. I don't think there were any on Friday this year. And if there were, it was a very small number. So you have to be looking in that 8-10, 6-8, 10-1 range. And most of us, and you can certainly tell me if you approach things a little bit differently, most of us are a hell of a lot better at finding a 6-1 than we are at finding a 25-1.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So when you're going there to play for that much money, that it's kind of a free roll. Once you qualify, it's just a free roll. So you want to come home with some money, right? I mean, you don't want to just say, okay, let's take a bunch of long shots and, you know, pray, you know.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, yeah, you can like some long shots. And I did like St. James. That's why I took him. Anyway, that's just, you know, that's just why I picked some of my lower. God, there's so much criticism on the social media. It's just crazy. I don't know how you do it, being a morning line maker for Keeneland and also the Breeders' Cup and giving out your picks and your, and then, you know, being a race caller at Sam Houston. I bet you get just they just really tear you up probably online, don't they? I mean, do you just not even look at social media or what?
I mean, I'm obviously sick in the head, so it's not that, you know. I actually, to be honest with you, by far and away, the job that has garnered the most criticism is Keeneland Morning Line. I mean, I get very little, you know, I'll get somebody that tells me, you know, you haven't picked a winner since like the Obama administration or something like that every once in a while, which there are days where it feels like that's true. But by far and away, I get the most criticism about the Keeneland Morning Line. And, you know, you would think that it's just a heck of a lot easier to criticize somebody about race calls or about handicapping than it is morning line making. But people have this borderline obsession with morning lines. And, you know, I feel like those of us that feel like we generally have a decent idea of what's going to happen. And don't get me wrong, I'm trying to make an accurate line no matter what. But bad morning lines are actually there to be exploited more so than they are to be mocked. And I understand there are times where, you know, you could be a somewhat, you know, passive type player, a weekend warrior, if you will, and you find this 9-2 shot and you think, oh man, I'm really going to score out in this 9-2 shot, and they go off 8-5. And look, the morning line maker feels like shit, right? We're not happy about that. We are not interested in having that happen on and on. But, you know, the amount of times that those happen, it's because of a scratch, or it's because of a surface change, or it's because of, you know, some speed coming out. And now there's a lone speed situation or something like that. There's a lot of other variables that go into it. But the criticism of taking horses at shorter prices in an event like the NHC, I will never understand. And I think it's funny that a lot of the biggest scores that we're seeing in the two biggest tournaments of the year, the BCBC and the NHC, while understandably they have totally different formats, they're completely different contests, but you won the NHC this year taking two favorites to close it out. Sean Borman won the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge by going all in on White Abario and then going about a third of his bankroll in on a cold exacta of Elite Power over Gunite. Those horses were not long prices. right? So this idea that you need to be doing nothing but firing away on price horses, whether it's in an event like the BCBC and making these large win bets on, you know, 15 to one shots or going to the NHC and only taking cap horses, it's just erroneous.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, that's the best way for me to sum it up. What will you do? Did you qualify at Horseshoe Indianapolis for this year's event?
I qualified at Horseshoe Indy, in the live money tournament. So all three qualifications I had was with the live money tournament at or the Horseshoe Indy.
Generally prefer a live money format?
I played in hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of, $2 mythical. And I've played in probably a dozen live money tournaments in my life. And I've qualified on three of them. So I think the live monies are easier because you just have to get one, you just have to cold cock one of them or, whatever. And then you can get there and sit on it or do whatever you got to do or wait till the end. I mean, there's so many different strategies. So I kind of like qualifying with a live money because it's easier or, it's more, you can do it just by one score, but with the $2 mythical, it's a, progression, you just got to keep adding to it. And then, whoever has the highest points wins or whatever. So.
Are you going to play in any additional contests this year? Do you think now with your newfound fame and glory?
Yeah, I'll probably, there's a few different, live monies I think that I'm going to be able to do now. I know I'm probably go to the Hawthorne one, maybe the Grade One Gamble. I'm in on the BCBC. I'm going to be accepting a Eclipse Award next year in January. So I'll probably do the Pegasus since I'll be there. I haven't done the Pegasus contest yet, but, I'm looking forward to all those. Can't wait.
Well, that's great, Mike. And I really, really appreciate you talking about that. And so, of course, we can't let you go without doing a little bit of handicapping. So we're going to cover the races at Aqueduct for Saturday afternoon, the pick six, as well as the late pick five at Santa Anita. So let's get right into that so I don't keep you terribly long. The pick six at Aqueduct starts on Saturday in race number three. It's another 8-race card in Ozone Park. And the third race on Saturday afternoon comes up at 2:26 Eastern time. It's a 7-furlong starter allowance event, and we have a field of 8 going postward here. Where did you think we could get this pick six started, Mike?
Well, as you know, the morning lines aren't out yet, and the post positions aren't out yet. But with that being said, you just got to kind of go with it. I'm going to get it started with Will Be Famous. It's second off a layoff. I think it's going to be Lone Speed. I'm just looking to see if Will Be Famous can wire the field. And then I'm also going to use Shelly. There's been a trainer change from Chad Brown to Mark Hennig, and I'm going to try to use both of those to get them started.
Yeah, I like it. I thought both of those two made sense. I do think Will Be Famous dangerous with the pace edge 7-2 on the morning line that actually just came out probably in the last hour or so. I also thought the 5 Duck Fat was a little bit interesting. I don't love the move to open company, but I do think this horse spent an appreciable amount of time last time on the inside, which wasn't necessarily the best place to be. Now second off a layoff for Neville Henry, low percentage connections there, which generally lead to you getting a bit better price. Race number 4 is a 12.5 claimer at a mile on the main track. And just to mix it up a little bit, I'll go first on this one. I thought this was a particularly tough race, to be honest. I do think the entry of Blake B and Pit Boss are dangerous. They come from different barns. They're both first off a claim. Pit Boss comes in off a better race than Blake B does. Blake B was disappointing at 6-5 against similar 12.5 claimers. Now first off a claim by Gustavo Rodriguez, who's actually on a 25-race losing streak in this particular category. Pit Boss should get a good trip and can be a little bit more forwardly placed on the outside. But I was a little intrigued by Durkin's Call, who's first off a claim for Linda Rice. She did take him for 16 and is dropping him to 12.5. But Linda's so good off the claim and is obviously back from her little brief suspension in here. So I kind of prefer Durkin's Call and Goldini to an extent to that entry. Where did you land in this second leg, Mike?
I landed on Pit Boss. I think that Phoebe Frost is going to be the speed of the race. You know, she's going to be out there setting a good pace, and I see Pit Boss stalking off the pace and then taking over. I think Daddy Knows is probably the class of the race. So I like to use Daddy Knows as well, and then also maybe Wild Banker. Probably will use that as a 7-year-old gelding. I used that in the NHC last year, and it was 8-5, and that helped me to qualify and get the day three. So Pit Boss is my top, and then I'll probably use or back up with Daddy Knows and Wild Banker.
Always, that horse owes you nothing, I'm sure, he will enjoy the rest of his career. Leg number three is a mile event on the main track. All these races, of course, are on the main track. This is a one other than for New York Reds. And I'll tell you what, Mike, this is a really good matchup between the four That's Money and the six St. Gaudens, both of whom were really impressive maiden winners last time out. David Aragona, who is the best morning line maker in the country, made St. Gaudens actually 9-5, despite That's Money having a faster speed figure in his debut. The other real candidate, it looks like, to be a little bit dangerous could be the 8, the Big Torpedo, who will have to improve off of a poor effort in the Gander, where it looks like he may have had an issue without not having Lasix. What did you think of this third leg and this good matchup of New York Reds?
My top choice is St. Gaudens. So he had a slow start, and then he jumped up, and he sat second five wide behind the long shot pace setter. I think he's going to stalk and then take over on the turn. And so he stalked and took over and won like a good thing on his last race. So he just seems like it. The third place horse out of that race was a Quiet Wisdom. He come back to win, and he improved his buyer by 22 points to an 83. So that race has potentially to be very productive. Also, probably will use the Big Torpedo and That's Money maybe as backups.
Yeah, makes sense. That's a good competitive third leg. Fourth leg is race 6 at 7 furlongs on the main track. This is another New York bred affair, and we have a horse coming off a trainer change in here in the 4 Quick to Accuse, who I think is going to get a good amount of support. Definitely a lot of attention at the windows. David made this horse a 3-1 on the morning line. I'm sorry, 7-2 on the morning line as the second choice, but there's speed in here. Pascal Moon on the inside, I think, will show some speed. I don't envision that Caldo Candy will be too far off of it coming off a maiden win. It kind of made me want to go the direction of an off-the-pace horse, and I would hope for a little bit better price, but the 7, Dr. Kraft, is actually the morning line favorite at 3-1. We'll see if he ends up getting the setup that he needs. He is getting blinkers on, which could sharpen him up a little bit in the opening stages as well. I'm also trying to figure out where those first two performances came from. Please Be Nice, who's now third off a layoff for Bill Mott, and trying to refine that form because it looks like he's gone the wrong direction. I guess I'll use Dr. Kraft. I'll probably end up including a little bit of Kentucky Joker and or Quick to Accuse in what I thought was a pretty tough race. Hopefully you have some better insight.
Well, I don't know about that, but I'm gonna go with Please Be Nice. I think it's the speed of the race. I like Katie Davis on speed horses. She gets them out and just tries to go. And she's coming off, the horse is coming off 3 really sharp works for Bill Mott. So I like Please Be Nice. And I think I'll probably back up or use both of the Chris Englehart horses, Dr. Kraft and Kentucky Joker.
Sounds like a plan. On to race 7, the Biagio's Rose at a mile on the main track. New York bred older females going postward here. And it's Fenty Valentine that's the morning line favorite at 5-2 for Jorge Abreu, who comes in off a narrow miss to Security Code last out at 7 furlongs. Felt to me like the mile was probably the equalizer between those two, and that Fenty Valentine could probably bridge the gap in there. Did you agree with that, or did you have an eye on somebody else?
I'm going to use 2 in this one. I'm going to, you know, Venti Valentine's the class of the race, 6 wins, 4 seconds, 4 thirds out of 18, you know, made $741,000. The last race was 7 wide and just missed as the favorite. But I think I'm going to also put Sweet Mystery in there, cutting back from a mile and eighth to a mile for Patrick Quick and Trevor McCarthy rides. Decent speed, decent late kick, should be a better price. What's that price on the morning line on that one?
Sweet Mystery is actually 10-1. Is
it 10-1? Yeah. So I was trying to get some price in there with the Vinti Valentine. So that's the two I think I'm going to go with.
Yeah, I thought the mile could be a little far for Security Code too, and I don't love her drawn on the inside, so it did make me kind of feel like you should be looking for a bit of a price somewhere too. That takes us to the last leg, race number 8, which is at 7 furlongs on the main track, and the 4 Silver Satin is going to be a pretty big favorite in here, 2-1 on debut and a good second. Behind that's Money, who's going to come back and run a little bit earlier, who we mentioned, so I'm sure all eyes are going to be on Silver Satin second time out. I did think the first timer, Shlomo, who is a homebred for Lee Einsiedler, always easy to root for Lee. That horse will take plenty of support as well. And I thought there was a case to be made for Yo Banana Boy on the far outside, who looked like he was about to pull off a slight upset on debut during the Belmont at Aqueduct meet before getting run down late and then ended his 2-year-old campaign with a poor effort at Churchill, but did so against Carbone and open company in there. So I thought he could be dangerous coming back off a layoff as Destin Heath seeks his first training win. How are we going to close this last leg out, Mike?
Yeah, I'm with Yo Banana Boy and Big Ego. Yo Banana Boy ran last time in a New York bred stakes race, 2 back in the slop, and then also in a salty $120,000 maiden special weight at Churchill last race. Both poor performances, but you know that first time got out, got a 72 buyer, set the pace, and just got nipped at the wire. And got beat by a promising Agalos the Great, and also beat Quiet Wisdom that day, as mentioned before, came back with an 83 buyer last out. So, and then Big Ego, he was the favorite in that race with the St. Gaudens, and that race that I keep talking about with Quiet Wisdom, and, you know, could be a productive race. So Big Ego was the favorite in that race. So he's eligible to approve second time out. So I'm going to go with Big Ego and also Yo Banana Boy. And then as a backup, if he gets in, Land Or is coming out of that same race that could be productive. So if he would happen to get in. Did he get in? You got? Do you have scratches yet?
No, not yet. We'll know. No, yeah, we will know that.
Oh, it's way early. I'm thinking. Okay. Yeah. That was just a one.
But hopefully, okay. I mean, you know, hey, you sound excited about him, so I'm hoping he gets in. All kidding aside, no, definitely one to keep an eye on if he's able to get in. Well, that's a look at the Aqueduct Pick 6 for Saturday afternoon. We're going to shift our focus out west to Santa Anita for the late Pick 5. And, of course, all of you In the Money Plus subscribers will get these selections emailed to you on Saturday so that you can follow along a bit if you've not been keeping track as we go through. The first leg of the late Pick 5 is race 5 at 6.5 furlongs down the hill. And Thornhouse comes back off a layoff here, Mike, having last been seen in May of 2023. I don't love the lengthy break, but undoubtedly this is a horse who's run a number of races that would make him very tough to handle, including his last start against Calbreds, which came in January of last year. And he's eligible for this race, I believe, by virtue of the layoff, because he's in for, I think he's in for like a waiver type situation. I'm really not positive. I don't know how he could win. He could be in a one other than having won it already twice. But nonetheless, he's here, and I'm guessing he's going to be a pretty big favorite. What did you think of this first leg?
Yeah, Thornhouse has had three excellent performances down the hill, 1 loss and 2 seconds. All three had strong numbers. We haven't seen this horse since May 6th of last year, but sports 2 wins and 1 second coming off the layoff. So he's shown he's, you know, can do it, you know, before, and I'm gonna give him a shot again, but also I'm gonna try to use Gypsy Tears with him. It's for Val Brinkerhoff. Last race got checked early, steady, and then came flying. You know, hope to get a little bit get a little bit better price with Gypsy Tears. So those two, the 5 and the 8.
I like it. I always laugh when I see outside horses going down the hill. One of the years I was at Santa Anita for the Breeders' Cup, I think it was in 2008, Aidan O'Brien trained Star Spangled Banner, and he drew the 14 posts, and he was getting interviewed by some journalists, and they were asking him about all of his horses. And he said, yeah, we're a little disturbed by Star Spangled Banner's draw. He's on the far outside. And they said to him, Aiden, being on the far outside going down the hill is actually an advantage. They make a right turn. And he said, oh, I guess, well, we're not that worried about it then. So, yeah, no harm in being drawn outside going down the hill. The second leg is a maiden special weight event at 6 furlongs on the main track. And I thought that the 3-year In Trouble was going to be the best of the experienced horses. But I do think, Mike, and of course we get a lot of workout info from Southern California, it's going to be interesting to see if either the 2 Queen of Naples or the 4 In Theory have caught the eye of some of the clockers. They're both from barns that are very, very good with first-time starters, those of Michael McCarthy and Bob Baffert, respectively. And the 4 In Theory posted a 59-2 bullet workout handily from the gate on March 13th. I'm going to guess that she's going to be ready to go.
Yeah, those three are exactly the three I've written down. I'm going to use You're In Trouble and In Theory on top, and then I'll use with a backup Queen of Naples. You're In Trouble looks fit, 4 sharp workouts for Doug O'Neill. Good numbers as a 2-year-old, first start as a 3-year-old, so has every right to improve, and just might beat that $800,000 Bob. And then In Theory, is a Bob Baffert horse, can't leave him off, or her off, should I say. And then Michael McCarthy, Queen of Naples, she had 6 sharp works and probably will use her as a backup.
I like it. Yeah, I think a race where you're going to have to cover both of those first-time starters. The third leg is the featured event on the card, the San Luis Rey going 1.5 miles partially down the hill, and then, of course, around the main oval. And one thing that stood out to me in here, Mike, is, Miss the Cut looks like he's really in the best form of anybody right now, but boy, is Balladeer loose on paper in this race.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I looked at those replays and looked at him and just, I think he's going a little bit longer this time. I mean, he couldn't hang on going 1.25 miles last time, so I'm thinking, okay, can he last for 1.5 miles? I don't know. I was wanting to maybe go there, but I decided not to. I think Missed a Cut and both Planetario, both of these horses, I think, can be in this Breeders' Cup turf this year. I think they can compete with the Euros, maybe. I don't know. Maybe I'm off a little bit, but I think they're both pretty deep. This Missed a Cut was in the Breeders' Cup Classic last year. Getting back on turf where I think he belongs, and had a real sharp effort last time in the Grade 3 San Marcos. So I'll probably hit that Missed a Cut button twice and the Planetario once, maybe. I'll probably use both of them.
Yeah, agreed. They both look to be in very good form. Planetario going all the way back to this race last year, and then the San Juan Capistrano has done some of his best work right there at Santa Anita. And I think the 1.5 miles is probably what equalizes the pace situation, where it does look like Balladeer has a big edge, but I don't really see him staying the 1.5 miles. I think that's the big concern by far. Race 8's a really good one, other than on the main track, with a recent maiden winner in Yellow Brick, who got a 98 buyer speed figure, looking to come back and improve off of that. Even if he doesn't, he'll be pretty tough to beat if he simply duplicates it. You've got Don't Swear Dave, first off a claim by Steve Knapp. I kind of like Yellow Brick at a few different points during his career and felt like he probably just needed time to put it together. Richard Mandela's barn has been hitting on all cylinders at this meet. I'm not going to be surprised if this horse comes right back and runs another big race. He'll have to deal with Cowboy Mike and Clouseau to the inside, who don't look like bad horses. Hawker was a clear second behind a runaway winner in Judge Miller last time out, but I still think Yellow Brick might have him exactly where he wants him. Where'd you land here?
Yeah, that 4-year-old debut was very, very impressive for Yellow Brick. That's my single. I'm just going to take Yellow Brick and move on.
Yeah, I like it. I think you actually can have it that simple. That takes us to the nightcap, where we go 1 mile on the turf. And, of course, the 1B a Goldfish in there, named for Ted Lasso and his advice to everybody on having a short memory. We don't want you to have a short memory as far as last weekend goes. We want you to remember that left and right. But how did you think we could close out this Pick 5 sequence?
Well, since I singled the last race, this is going to be my spread race. Try to get maybe a price in there too. The 4, 5, 6, and 7. I think I'm I don't want to leave the four off and then lose the pick five by not putting that horse in. But the other three, I think we can get a decent price maybe. They're Beautiful Janet had a couple pretty good efforts, and Run a Mile in My Shoes. And then I think probably out of all four of them, I like Quantum Energy probably the best. It would probably be my top choice, but I think I'm going to play all four of them.
Yeah, love that running line for a second-time starter in Quantum Energy with a little bit of trouble along the way and still a decent enough finish, a horse that should improve with experience. I'm a big fan of betting second-time starters in general because of the amount of improvement horses show with a race under their belt. I thought Sneaker was the horse to beat. I don't need to go out of my way to make a big bet on her, though, given how really average she ran last time at 2-5. Feels like she could be a little bit of a money burner also, but an interesting way to end this sequence with those competitive Calbreds going postward. Mike, thanks so much for joining me. I really appreciate it. I kept you for a dog's age, it seemed like, but I thought we had a great conversation about your tournament success, and I look forward to seeing you at a racetrack very soon, and we can reprise at least hopefully the alcoholic beverage portion of our blackjack rendezvous last year.
Right on. Looking forward to it, Nick. I really appreciate it, buddy. Thank you.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. And so we are going to keep moving on with this show right now. We're thrilled to be partnered with Sam Houston Race Park for 2024 to promote their upcoming Texas Champions Day in March, which will be Saturday, March 23rd, and the next big contest, the Houston Betting Championship, on Saturday, April 6th. The contest is a $2,000 bankroll live money contest with daily feeders to weekly qualifiers available at horsetourneys.com. In addition to your bankroll, you can take home one BCBC or two NHC spots that are on the line, as well as 2024 NHC Tour points. Contest races will consist of all Sam Houston races plus simulcast races run during the Sam Houston card from Aqueduct, Keeneland, Oaklawn, and Santa Anita. That will include the Wood Memorial, Bluegrass, and Santa Anita Derby. Be sure to get your seat now as entries are limited. Go to shrp.com for more information. And don't miss out on the Houston Betting Championship, Texas's first ever contest to yield a spot to the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. Up next on the Players Pod, we're going to shift our attention to the East, way East, and bring in Klaus Ebner to talk about this weekend's JRA action. Klaus, we've got a big Group 1 coming up on Sunday. Of course, Sunday in Japan, but more so late Saturday into early Sunday for us. Looking forward very much to the Takamatsu no Miya Kinen. How did I do?
You did better than me, Nick, because I always seem to butcher. This is the one race where I get tongue-tied on it, so you got it.
Not an easy one by any means. This is coming up at Chukyo on Sunday, and we've got some horses that are a little bit familiar to an American audience, some Breeders' Cup participants from last year, including Mikel Yell and Wynn Carnelian.
Yeah. So we've got a few that are familiar in there, and then also there are a few sort of breeding-wise as well. If you sort of look at the winner of the Sprinter Stakes in September of last year, and that was Mama Cocha, who's the full sister, if you will, to the ever-present Sodashi. So, yeah, certainly there's a lot of horses in here that kind of, again, had a lot of back class and horses that have won some grade one events. And I think, it's a big question of who's going to show up on the day. Some are coming into this race in sort of peak form, where others are trying to find some form. So, yeah, I think it'll be a very wide open race on the weekend.
So we've got a field of 18 going postward. No surprise there. Let's start with the favorite, who the best I see it at this point looks like Lugal, coming in off a victory last time out and expected to be the market leader.
Yeah, so Lugal comes in, like as you mentioned, off of a win last time out in the Silk Road Stakes. Was pretty impressive that day. Won in a really quick time of 107.7. The challenge I'm going to have with this field, and again, just looking on paper, there seems to be a lot of speed in here. So there's two things that really kind of pause for concern for me in here, Nick, is the fact that, A, you're going to have a lot of speed in here. Obviously, a sprint race, that's fine, with a lot of horses that want to be forwardly placed, including possibly Lugal. Yes, he has shown in his previous races that he can sit further back, but for the most part, he likes to be stalking at a pace. So, if he's up in that kind of, forward vanguard, well, is that going to mean that he's going to be burnt out early or he had used early to kind of maintain position? Hard to say. And the other kind of challenge that we have, and we're kind of waiting for that, is the forecast to kind of see what happens, because in this case here, Chukyo is supposed to have a lot of rain in that area. So we may have you know, a turf course that's more good to soft or even soft possibly, depending on how much rain they get and how much rain falls on the day. So lots of question marks there. But yeah, in terms of Lugao, this is kind of one that's, I'm not going to say really favor the market. You know, in Japan and right now I'm seeing about, I'm going to say, 2-1, give or take 3-1.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe 7-2. That's kind of the odds that are kind of floating around right now in the market for Lugao. So yes, lots to like there. You know, the one that I'm kind of looking towards is a horse that will be closing from the clouds. And yes, she'll be a favorite. She usually sends in with a rush at the end, and that's Nemours Clair. So Nemours Clair is, you know, a horse that has a lot of class. You know, she is one that's always, you know, putting in her best effort late, and, you know, was second last time out to So Dazzling, who's another one in here I think really deserves a very, very long look in here. And prior to that was a really respectable third to Mama Cocha in that aforementioned Sprinter Stakes. So, you know, again, I think running style fits in here. You know, she has finished very well over soft conditions, has won over yielding as well in a sprint race 3 starts back in, you know, in August of last year. So, you know, she's 5 years old. She's developing the right time, has the right connections. And I think for me, she'll probably be the one to beat, I think, in terms of here. You know, but again, I said, as the race being wide open, there's a few others in here that I'm sort of looking at that, you know, I think fit the picture. You know, you have a horse like in here, Mad Cool. Now, Mad Cool in here is, you know, I think for me, you can kind of throw out some of the you know, last race, you want to call it that. He shipped over to Hong Kong, finished up. Okay, 8th. I don't think he was that great that day, but prior to that was, you know, only a nose behind Mama Cocha on the Sprinter Stakes. You know, a couple starts back, if you look at it, he won a listed stakes over a yielding surface. So I think that, you know, he's gonna like the surface here in terms of if it shows up soft, and he's proven that he's very competitive against these types. And, you know, so the Sunday Racing Connection team is very strong. So again, another one who think will have a big shot in here. And if I'm trying to go to look for some prices on the back end of the exotics, I do have a few that are kind of really, really, at least longer prices in Japan right now. So if you look at So Dazzling 25-1, and then you also have Champagne Color for me, who's going to be a giant price on the weekend, has shown a lot of back class. We'll get to him in a second. But for me, if you look at, you know, sort of So Dazzling as an option, developing filly by Heart's Cry, beat Nemours Clair last time out by a neck over 1400, which is 7 furlongs. Again, is another who will be closing from the clouds, in my opinion. And it just seems to be kind of the Heart's Cry type, which is traditionally like a late 3-year-old, early 4-year-old season sort of developing types. That's kind of what he gets. I think that, you know, again, another one who is owned by formidable connections there, being owned by Shaddai Racecourse. And I think that she'll be closing late. You'll get a price for her. And again, she beat Nemours Clair last time at 7 furlongs. Yeah, it's a little bit shorter here in terms of 6, but I think she can get the 6 with no problem. And then another one, like I said, it's just, he's a giant bomb. He's one of those horses, Nick. You look at the form, you'd be like, wow, why do you like this horse? Well, again, I have to go back to his 3-year-old year for the most part to kind of get that form that I'm looking at with Champagne Color. You know, last 2 starts were just abysmal, if you will. So, you know, 16th last time out in the February Stakes, I'm willing to forgive that. The horse tried dirt for the first time, did not like it, wanted no part of it. And then prior to that was a really lackluster 14th in the Aceta Keenan going a mile. But if you go back to his 3-year-old career, well, he was a grade 1 winner in the NHK Mile Cup. Yes, that was over a mile. And also 3rd New Zealand Trophy, also over a mile. So I think he's a bit of a sneaky horse for me in terms of here. And I think that, you know, again, you can't go wrong with this horse. It's going to be 60-1 on the day. And I'm not saying he's going to win, but I do think that, you know, if this horse is taken back, make that one run again, that he does have a shot to at least fill in the back end of exotics.
I like it. That's a great rundown of what looks like a really competitive race we're looking forward to on Sunday. Klaus, before we let you go, I wanted to ask you a little bit about Liberty Island, who's going to go postward in next Saturday's Dubai Shima Classic. I'm sure we'll enlist you for a little bit of help on some of the Japanese raiders on that Dubai World Cup program. But what can you tell us about Liberty Island, who's going to square off against August Rodin, who we saw, of course, stateside win the Breeders' Cup Turf last fall?
Yeah, she is. So for those of you that don't know who Liberty Island is, she's the one that was sort of the main hope to try and upset Equinox in their starts. She put in a valiant effort, but again, Equinox being Equinox, he put her to the sword, unfortunately. But again, she was a three-year-old filly that was a kind of tail end of a long year for her in terms of running multiple races that she won, including the Oaks last year. She's gone from strength to strength. I think this filly has all the class in the world to be the next superstar, super horse in the world. So, yes, I certainly respect Auguste Renin and the quality that he has. You know, of course, he has Japanese breeding as well, being by Deep Pickback, which is funny, but he's an Irish bred. I definitely think, this is a very, very tough field. And, certainly the other ones that are in there from Japan as well will also put in their best efforts, being right now Justin Palace, Shariar, and Stars on Earth. But to your point, Nick, I think she's the real deal, and she'll give this field all they can handle.
No doubt she probably, her connections chipped into the retirement gift for Equinox to give her more of an opportunity down the line to strut her stuff. So really looking forward to that. And of course, the Japanese Raiders have done incredibly well on all of these big global racing days, a testament to their program and everything that they've done in terms of breeding and just putting forth a tremendous product that we've all grown to really, I think, admire.
Certainly. Yeah. And again, and they have a very strong contingent this year. We'll see how they do. And one thing I can kind of just take a quick step back to the race on the weekend is speaking of shippers, we also have, it's kind of slipped my mind, but we also have a Hong Kong shipper in there too, which is what, we don't usually see that in there, but I certainly think that, it's great seeing the horses ship over from Hong Kong. And in this case here, we'll see what Victor the Winner can do, 6-year-old gelding. And, I think he's another one who's up there that deserves a chance to hang on how he does with the track and the ship.
Very much looking forward to that, the featured event from the weekend, and of course seeing how the Japanese runners perform next week in Dubai. And Klaus, we thank you as always for your insight into a little bit of JRA action.
Thanks, Nick. Have a great day.
Absolutely. Big thanks to Klaus. And that's going to do it for this edition of the Players Pod. Thank you to Mike Gillum as well, who joined me to discuss the Aqueduct Saturday card. Now, of course, when I taped that with Mike, they had not canceled the Aqueduct Saturday card yet. So the Aqueduct Saturday handicapping that you hear earlier in this program is actually going to be for Sunday. Same races, just being run 24 hours later. Mike and I also covered the Pick 5 at Santa Anita. I want to mention the Florida Derby Challenge next week, available at expressbet.com as well as on track at Santa Anita and Gulfstream. And mark your calendars for Saturday, April 6th, to join us down at Sam Houston Race Park for the inaugural Houston Betting Championship, yielding one BCBC spot and two NHC spots. Going to probably be a relatively small field, so an excellent opportunity to qualify for the 2025 NHC or the 2024 Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. That's it for this edition of the Players Pod. Again, a big thanks to Mike Gillum and Klaus Ebner, who joined me, and for Peter Thomas Fornital and everyone else at the network. Nick Tamaro here. Until next time, best of luck.